This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Growth Point at this point in time, you know, they have, come through and they're saying that they will be opening three new university student residences for South Africa's 2023 academic year. And so we are joined online by George Muchanya, who is the head of Growth Point Investment Partners, to help us make sense around everything that's got to do with this particular REIT. George, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Spiso, and good evening to your listeners.
Yeah, maybe, George, to, you know, bring the listener on board around, you know, where Growth Point is with the student accommodation REIT as well, etc. Maybe just take us back around the official launch of the REIT structure itself, and then what were the terms that were on the term sheet for this particular REIT?
The REIT itself was launched on 1st of December 2021. Consistent with the REIT legislation, we positioning our platform as income. As such, most of our investors in the underlying REIT themselves seek to get regular income, which we pay every 6 months, and we pay 90% of that. So who we have in there would be a pension fund. And interestingly enough, there's quite a lot of investment holding companies as well that have been looking, and two of them have committed significant capital into our platform.
Sure. And I mean, you know, then just getting into then ultimately the latest developments around this particular REIT, you know, we are hearing Peak Studios, which is on the doorstep of the University of Cape Town, Brooklyn Studios by University of Pretoria, as well as Apex Studios at the entrance of the University of Witwatersrand. Certainly all, looking at encompassing 2,200 students in this new accommodation. Tell us a little bit more about it.
That's right. I think the key underlying criteria for us in terms of always our new investment is proximity to university. I think it's key important part so that students feel part of the university. We just don't really feel for what we're targeting, that students should be bused in the morning and bused back in the evening. We really feel that for them to be fully integrated and be fully assimilated to university and its culture, and to be able to really bond with students outside where they live, it has to be close to university. I think what we have seen over the years is that the intake into universities has increased substantially, but that wasn't necessarily matched by increase in supply of beds. So that's why we increase in capacity there. That's all universities. But with it as well has come all university-owned properties. Us and our competitors have been focusing then on improving the quality of beds at VET, similar to Pretoria and similar to UCT. And what I probably need to just say, yes, Piso, is that this shows the importance of partnership between government and the private sector to the benefit of the greater good and to the greater society out there. University has always traditionally provided accommodation, but over the years, the investors are capital constrained and haven't been either building new accommodation or renovating and upgrading existing accommodation. So they in private sector has come in a big way. And what you see now is we're building across those universities and some of our competitors as well.
Sure. And I mean, I think, you know, George, getting into some of the reflections around what's happened, I mean, a lot of people who've been running student accommodation properties have struggled in the last 2 years because of COVID as well. And universities are still trying to figure out the model of kind of digital learning and hybrid learning approaches as well. We know UCT is also coming through now with a digital high school, etc. you know, what are you guys expecting on the back end from occupancy rate and, of course, the rentals you're able to command on these properties?
The way to look at it, Fuso, is in terms of who the target market is, which is basically the universe of all students. If you look at someone who has been fortunate enough to pass matric and they live in Dipsloot or Alex, this is the last new ticket that just opens opportunity for them. And to expect them to pass an engineering degree living in that environment, it is definitely not the right environment for them. As such, what you will see there is that for that broader society of students, they always have to be in university, in university accommodation of some sort, to be able to really focus on the last mile. That's on the one side. For those people or students that are from the high end, private schools, if anything, the opportunity really is for them to grow away from home, which is a halfway house between high school and university. So it's a perfect opportunity. Where there is always a gap, as we know is always the case, is the people in the middle, those are that squeezed. So those are too poor, they are catered for by government. Those are too rich, they can afford themselves. Where the bottleneck is in the middle, and those are the people that really need all the help, either from government or from the bank or whatever it is. So what we've seen during COVID and what we continue to see now is that there is still significant demand driven by those two extremes.
And just occupancy rates, I mean, I guess you were telling us simply, I think, at least from what I was picking up, is that, of course, you've got your Thrive student living propositions, and that's the one that deals with kids or young people who are studying through NAFSAs and are funded through NAFSAs. And then, of course, you've got those who are, in essence, call it more privately funded students who are then, you know, on the kind of higher end, and then there's this missing middle. Do you have one full occupancy on the two portfolios, and then looking at this missing middle, how are you guys, in terms of the suite of the portfolio that you've got? I mean, at this point in time, you've got, what, 7,200 beds?
That's right. The occupants are quite good, just simply because there isn't a lot of supply that has come over the last years. I think a lot of us have seen images at the beginning of every academic year of students sleeping in the libraries or in the streets. It just shows really sort of the demand shortage, that the demand supply imbalance out there. It's also fair to say that a lot of the people at this stage that live at behind someone's house or in backyard, which is the less conducive environment for students to study, invariably they're always students with a missing middle. Mm. Those are the people that we really need to sort of focus on. And we're chatting to different people, and I know that there are quite a few bursaries that focus on specifically missing middle to at least bridge the gap in there.
Sure. Okay. And I mean, I think, that is going to be an interesting one, George, around also the future of partnerships in this kind of, REIT structure, as also you guys try to, you know, kind of serve the kind of enterprise objectives as well, of course, you know, serve the social imperatives of making sure that students are housed and I think in sustainable structures. We are reflecting, of course, on the latest developments around the Growth Point Student Accommodation REIT that they do have. They are launching three university residences at this point in time that are certainly going to supplement, of course, the challenges that currently are in the market at this point in time around student accommodation. So it is challenges that they're solving in Pretoria, and that is Apex Studios by Tux. It is Brooklyn Studios by Tux, and then it's Apex Studios by Vitz, as well as Peak Studios there by UCT. But this comes in, of course, as a part of a bigger portfolio that is about 7,200 beds that they currently have at this point in time, particularly solving around some of the shortage challenges in terms of student accommodation. One of the other conversations that George did share with us, of course, is around, you know, looking at modes and mechanisms of closing the gap for the missing middle, where some of the, I guess, kids coming out of the missing middle homes are the ones who end up in backroom dwellings as residency accommodation options, primarily because of lack of affordability of some of the other student residences that are currently available, but of course that they can't afford. And one of the things I did ask, of course, is around the questions around this hybrid learning space. And again, we got from George there that there certainly is sufficient demand and very low levels or very high levels of occupancy for these, properties at this point in time. And so that's the conversation, power listener, that we are having. And so, George, I will bring you back into the conversation and say, when, everyone now is getting into the green economy space, we're looking at, options of getting partially off the grid, etc. What's the overall first and foremost strategy from an ESG point of view around your portfolios in the student accommodation space, and how is that translating as well into some of the new assets that you're bringing on board?
Certainly, greening has now become pretty much an imperative for GrowthPoint, and GrowthPoint's policy is to be carbon neutral by 2050. So that's really sort of drives what we do as well in the student resi, in the student resi funds. What we do practically is all our new buildings we're putting solar. We, however, unfortunately limited by the extent of the roof space itself. But nevertheless, we're doing what we can. We are using particularly heating, as you can imagine, that heating is a big significant element within a building, particularly for young students. We're investing a lot in heat pumps, the windows, energy efficient windows and all that. Further to that, we have undertaken to some of our investors that all our student resi buildings would be EDGE certified going forward, and for those that we acquired as existing, we'll also retrofit them as well to ensure that they're EDGE certified.
And I mean, George, I'm asking specifically as well insofar as, you know, the kind of investor gains that you get from coming off the grid in terms of what are the savings that come through because of some of the solar panels that you've got and the heat pumps that you've got and how that translates into investor value as well. And this is one of the conversations I do want to tee up as well for people who would be the investors on the REIT side. So I'm asking mostly as well around some of the gains that it brings into the capital structure of the REIT itself, and then of course potential implications, whether it is from a capex point of view when you're retrofitting some of the existing buildings, or of course then some of the new buildings that are coming on board as well.
Going off the grid a long while, just given our constraints, what you also need to happen, which probably is the REIT sector is working towards, and just the broad industries around wheeling, because a lot of the energy, particularly solar, will be more in the Karoo. That's where most of the solar panels are installed there. But unless there is and there are wheeling arrangements in place between a producer there and our individual building, the extent to which we can rely on that is limited, so it's going to take a while before we go completely off the grid. So I really don't think that is a need to short to medium term opportunity. But however, we do see it as something that we can play a little part on as we're going along at this stage.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm asking George specifically also because, you know, and as I said, I think I'm asking it particularly now from an investor lens, because some of your competitors are using the ESG strategy as a competitive edge at this point in time, particularly in how it translates into better portfolio management, into better capital management, and how that unlocks more value, whether it ultimately comes back into disbursements or improving the yields that they're able to get, and then maybe getting into then the investment, the kind of value proposition of the REIT itself. What are the yields that we're expecting to see from this kind of REIT from an investor base point of view, and how does it come and how do you benchmark against other REITs?
But particularly, before I come to that, I think in terms of there is no doubt that one or two buildings that we the most efficient one would be about 3% cost income ratio lower. So there is definite merit there, especially as you say, in going green and being able to proactively manage from ESG point of view. So there is definite benefit in that. And we're going to continue to look at those opportunities to make sure that we reduce our cost income ratio. So that's in respect of that. In terms of the yield, interestingly enough, this is one of those sectors where, in spite of the supply-demand imbalance, one cannot really push the rentals too high. Firstly, because Naspers itself caps whatever its contribution is, and there are very few parents there that can top up. Then on the high end, the cake is small, so you can't really go and do large scale only on the high end. So the margins then will be typically what you'd get in the retail and offices, which is probably around 9.5% to 10%. The key advantage, though, that we have in this sector is that the rentals become sticky because we don't really have pent-up demand. So that really goes a long way then in terms of making sure that the rentals are sustainable as compared to other sectors.
And I mean, for me, this kind of portfolio is an alternative portfolio, and therefore one would expect better yields than the more established portfolios in terms of the retail and commercial portfolios. And that's exactly one of the reasons why I was asking from that point of view. Primarily also because is that from a cash management point of view, some of the flows that come from the Naspers, etc., aren't as regular than you would get through a retail complex, for example. And their ability as well from a tenant management point of view is a lot more complex through a student accommodation structure than it is. And so these are the things that should be commanding a high yield for an investor who is investing in this REIT. And this is why I was asking around particularly the differentiated offering of this particular REIT and the value that it offers investors.
The interesting thing is that from a risk, initially when we got into this sector, we thought it was more risky than the other asset classes than REITs, for example. It turned out that not, particularly if you build around university. University is not going to go anywhere for the next 20, 30 years. So already if you arrive there, you're going to get your income, so as long as your pricing is right. So that takes away the significant risk component, the risk premium that any typical investor would want. So as a result of which then there are one-year leases, and the advantage about what you have here is that the leases renew every single year, and therefore you don't really get what you get in other sectors where you get escalation for 7 continuous years, and then the rent goes back 30, 40% backwards. So when you start analyzing those things...
But I mean, those, you price in those escalations from a seven-year point of view, and even if it does come back a little bit when you get a new tenant coming in and you've got a rebase per square kilometer that you're renting around, you've still been able to command much, much higher escalations. And I mean, those escalations will range somewhere between 7% and 13%, which you're not able to command in the student accommodation space. And so the asset itself is not necessarily then comparable to a retail asset.
Oh, no, fair enough, except that when you're looking at retail, you have no control over supply sides. That's one thing. If you look at the impact that online is having to affordability, if you look at all the other pressures, that the parents are going to cut more on their food before they cut on the fees that they have to pay to their child. So on a risk-weighted basis, you're not going to get a lot more risk premium to student resi. If anything, it's less risk and low return.
And I'd like to see what your WACC model looks like, George. Because again, I think there's a lot of qualitative, I think, assessment here that is coming in terms of how we're risk profiling here, and that's one of the things that I guess I was trying to interrogate. But George, thank you very much, sir, and have a lovely evening further.
Thank you very much, Joseph. Thank you very much. We're happy to engage in future if any of your callers want to ask specifically as investors going towards the opening. If they want to ask specific questions, we're always available. But thanks for your time.
Danko. Power listener, that was George Muchanya, who is the head of Growth Point Investment Partners.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.